Han satt der i McCaféen med pensumboka og en latte, og for tredje gang bladde han en side tilbake og leste den på nytt. Og igjen var det som om ordene som sto der bare stokket seg og ikke lenger hadde noen betydning. Men han så at alle andre som satt der klarte å jobbe. Så hva var egentlig problemet hans, annet enn det åpenbare? At eksamen var tre dager unna, og han bare en tredjedel inn i pensum. Og det er sånne ting som gjør at noen tar opp en vindusplass her hele dagen. Men sånn er livet. Og McDonald's er bare en liten del av det, tross alt.
Tyrant fra USA ut med det første albumet sitt på 24 år, og I den anledning tok jeg en telefon til bassist Greg May og vokalist Rob Lowe. Jeg heter Helle Stenkløv, og du hører på Jernverket. Før vi kjører intervju har jeg en beskjed til. For at Jernverket skal overleve som podcast trengs det midler, så jeg har opprettet en Patreon-side og en Vipps-konto. Så om du vil bidra med noen slanter for å holde Jernverket flytende, hadde jeg satt enormt stor pris på det. Du kan bidra månedlig via Jernverkesiden på patreon.com eller gi en enkeltsum via Vipps nummer 567438. Beløpet selvsagt valgfritt. All informasjon står nederst I episodebeskrivelser med en lenke som fører etter kassen. Igjen, tusen takk for alle bidragene så langt. Jeg klarer ikke herre uten deg. Og du, Jernverket og Munnvoll skal lansere en chilisaus sammen med chili og tomatio fra Haggan til Jernverket og godis fra arkivet til Munnvoll. Akkurat nå kjører vi en navnekonkurranse. Hva skal sausen hete? Gå inn på Facebook og Instagram for å delta, og du kan vinne en flask når sausen kommer. So, hi guys, how are you doing?
Hey. Good. Great to see everybody.
Yeah, how's the corona situation over in the U.S.?
It's, well, you know, bad and okay, actually. Some areas aren't as impacted with people, and those areas seem to be okay. That's kind of where I am. I'm in the suburbs of Los Angeles, downtown Los Angeles. People are elbow to elbow, you know, not too good. But this governor of California has put everybody on lockdown for the last couple of weeks. Traffic isn't so bad as it usually is, and seems to be making a difference.
Mm. How about you, Rob?
Oh, yeah. Nah, part of AZ I'm at. I'm a little bit southeast of Phoenix, and it's not horrible. I mean, people are still dropping left and right, but it's not so bad. And we're not really on lockdown. It's just kind of voluntary, you know, stay at home type of thing.
It means you guys can't go on tour with your new album, but we'll...
Exactly.
Yeah,
we've had invitations to do so. We actually having to cancel a big festival next month that I had booked. It was a Doom Fest in New England, and that's up in the New York area, East Coast area, and they're the hardest hit. They literally have had, I think, 100 people a day since the thing has begun. For the United States, that's the most dangerous area. Mm-hmm. But we didn't, Tyrant didn't cancel. We were going to go in, and we were dying to play and promote this album. But we got the word from the promoter. He called me and said, Greg, I want to put it at 2021 and keep everything the same. So they're just transferring our flights to next year and hoping that it'll be all, you know, alleviated by then.
Yeah, a lot of festivals have done that, I've seen. So hopefully 2021 will be the year. But let's talk music. Can't you just give me a short description of who you are and what you do in the band Tyrant, Greg?
Well, I'm the bass player. I started the group my last year of high school. I'd been taking bass lessons when I was 16. That was 1976. I was a football player, grew up in a family from Texas. And I grew up thinking that's what I was going to do. That's how I was going to get my college paid for. And found out different. I was a little too small, a little too slow, even though I could put the helmet to people pretty well. I decided I would have to find a new way once I started seeing that the door was going to close on me for football. So I picked up a bass, taken some lessons, and by the time I was a senior, I was playing the parties after the football games. Take off my football uniform, pick up my bass, and go jam. And had a lot of fun playing all the early covers. A lot of times people didn't even know who these bands were. I was luckily able to find, you know, early Scorpions, early Judas Priest, UFO, of course, Black Sabbath, Rainbow. These bands were all my idols. And I started out by playing their material and as a cover band. And like I say, a lot of times we'd have a good, you know, sized party going, and we'd be playing. It kind of morphed into, once you start having command of other people's material like that, you kind of get tired of hearing people just yelling for Iron Maiden, Scorpions, Black Sabbath. Now I'm the one lugging my equipment. I want you to start yelling for Time It. Anyway, and it was called Time It then. The logo wasn't quite the same. That also changed. But it was Time It then, because I was kind of a headstrong guy, and I kind of got labeled that. I wasn't going to play any Kiss or Cheap Trick. I was really going to play just this early Scorpions, Black Sabbath sort of style. And it kind of morphed me into the Tyrant. You know, I said, that the stuff that we're not going to be playing any Leonard Skinner. I'm sorry, even though they're great, but it's just not going to be this band style. So I started then. It morphed into bringing in my brother once his football career was done. He was also playing ball, and I said, let's bring you over and get you all decked out in leather. I kind of created the monster. I brought him into my room, decked him all out with leather, things that would fit him, told the other singer to stay home. And I called Rocky and Rob Roy at the time. I said, I got a surprise for you guys tonight. And we came in, and we said, we're going to start working on all originals and no more covers. So it took us about a year to really get that look together that you see on the cover of Legions of the Dead album, to really have a look and original material and sound. And not to take too long with it, but by 83, we were able to start hitting the clubs on the infamous Sunset Strip, where people were lined up, you know, by the mile, metalheads. It had since disappeared, like a herd of cattle gone to slaughter. But at the time, it was just people, endless people, metalheads, for everything, from Guns N' Roses to Slayer, you know, to our shows and then to Guns N' Roses and Motley Crue. I mean, it was just crazy. It was such a fun time to be there. That was awesome. Because sometimes you'd have, you know, fans crossing over and coming to our shows and our shows going to that. It's just for the hell of it. But 83, Metal Blade showed up at one of our shows that we finally had got. It was like one of the, I think the second show we played out there. Moving on from the Pasadena area, you know, Van Halen country, they call it. That's where we started out. And but we went out to the Strip, and next thing you know, Brian Slagle, Bill Montoyer, some other executives of Metal Blade were there. And right away we were signed. Bang. I was 23. Rocky was 22. And I think Glenn was 18. They let him into the club. He was 21 and over, but he was so big that they didn't ask him for his ID. And then bang. You know, we got signed to do Metal Massacre 3. So from 78 to 83 went by in a flash, but I went from just starting to play, really, pretty much, to now I'm going into a recording studio with Bill Montoyer and putting that first song on Metal Massacre. And then the whole Metal Blade ran its course, you know, ran with Metal Blade, and we did well. Had a comeback record in 96. Because in the middle of the 90s, everything shut down out here. It was just all Nirvana and Alice in Chains, which I didn't mind because it killed off a lot of the hair metal, like Faster Pussycat and really Guns N' Roses. Most of their careers kind of died in the 90s, and I wasn't into that anyway. The grunge music was actually a little heavier. I liked Alice in Chains, but most of those bands literally died. Alice in Chains, a couple of guys died. I think Nirvana, a guy, one of them at least died, and so metal just started dying, basically. And then rap was coming up, and then I got a call from Germany in 96 that said, hey, we got to get a new Tyrant album going, you know? I'm like, wow, really? You know, I think it came in on a fax machine.
Yeah, because it had been 10 years without any albums, almost. Or was it 88?
24. It was 23, 24
albums. Oh, years, I thought you talked about 96 now.
It was 96. 96 was when our third album came out.
Yeah. I'm referring to the two first albums and the 96 album. Sorry.
Yeah, and that's when I had heard of Robert when he was in Solitude Eternius, was in the 90s. Because I would see reviews of our record, and then I would see reviews of his, you know, right next to it. And I'd I got to check these guys out because they were saying, you know, similar stuff. They weren't thrash. They weren't speed. They were just straight up in your face metal. And I think, wow, kind of, you know, like our style. And that's really when I got turned on to Rob's music, and I was going, wow, these guys are good. I was actually hoping to play with us, our band and his band. You know, and I was a big fan of Rob's voice. He's a great singer. So that's the 90s. In the 90s, that's when it happened, when I kind of heard about Rob. And then it died down again. You know, 2000 wasn't really, you know, huge metal. We started doing actually some, for Dwell Records, we signed a multi-album deal to do their tribute CDs. Go in the studio and do a song from Black Sabbath, and Scorpions, Judas Priest. That was kind of fun. We did that all through the 90s. Just staying busy. You know, then a long story short, we were called up to play a Kit Festival in 2009, headline, with old friends of ours, Abattoir and Lizzie Borden. It was like a high school reunion, you know. These guys we were playing with all the time back in the Metal Blade days, you know, and they were from this area too, so we played quite a bit with those guys. And they said, you know, get the original members together. So 2009, you know, I got married and in 91, the other guys got married, had kids. I had a kid. We kind of settled into our careers. Everybody had something going, you know, because the metal wasn't so big. You know, it was something that was always in our hearts. But it wasn't really something that was, you know, paying our mortgage. So we kind of had to find other talents. You know, like Rocky would put cars back together, the car motors. I'd go over there and I'd worry about his fingers. I mean, they'd be all like, you know, bleeding and covered with oil and grease. He'd be in there rebuilding motors with a cigarette in his mouth. You know, I'm like, and we would still talk. I'm like, dude, don't get your fingers cut off. You're going to need them again someday. You know? Like, yeah, when?
I'm sorry to cut you off, but Rob, no, do you think fine. You can, I don't know if, is it, no, it's probably not possible to mute your microphone because when you move, there's a lot of noise. I think it's coming from, it's distorting. Okay. No, it probably, maybe it's the wind. Sorry to interrupt you, Greg. Just go
no,
on.
No, we really got to the end of it.
Yeah.
2009 saw us come back and headline in Germany. And we hadn't played together in years, you know, as a band, especially with Rob Roy, our original drummer. We hadn't even seen him in years. But we were lucky to find him, get a studio. He had to learn songs from the other albums to do the set in Germany. And it was really cool. I mean, to get us all the original members together, put a set list together of all our favorite songs, and then go over there and headline. It was packed. We got a lot of positive feedback from the fans, promoters, everybody. That was one of their biggest shows. And they're saying, you guys got to come back at some point with a new record. And at that time, we were just, you know, scrambling to put a set together to play. It was kind of something we hadn't even thought of. But then as time went on, me and Rocky were talking more and more about, yeah, I've got some songs. Here we are. We started we were playing festivals every year along the way. But me and Rocky would get together with our drummer, Ronnie Wallace. Ronnie Wallace came in 2010 when we did some festivals in New York in 2010. Rob dropped off right away. He did all he could to help us in Germany, and after that he was gone. So we found this Ronnie Wallace, friend of Glenn's, brought him in. And we started working on new material, you know, on our own time. And next thing you know, we've got Hereafter, which I guess you've heard. You must have heard it in its entirety.
Yeah. 24 years between this album and the last one.
But exactly. Can you believe it?
No, actually. I think that it must, I don't know how it feels to be out with a new album so many years later. Do you get kind of nervous thinking about the jump, or do you feel that you have to prove anything for the fans after all these years?
No, you know, all I was thinking, Rocky was thinking at the time, you know, this is before Robert came in, we needed some new metal to hear. And if it's our metal, even better. We didn't even worry if we sold like zero CDs because no one liked us or liked metal anymore. We didn't care. We just wanted to create some new metal so we could jam it in our cars driving around. And because Sabbath had died, Priest died, well, kind of, the original guitar players aren't there. Sabbath died, now Slayer's gone. I mean, people that we grew up liking and or some like Slayer jamming with are now done. So who's going to carry the torch? Sabotage? Sabotage, one of my favorite bands ever. Someone there died, the guitarist died. I mean, who else is going to create this stuff? So we were pretty much doing it and playing it just for our own enjoyment. And if other people jumped on and liked it, so be it. If they didn't, hey, we liked it. You know, so, yeah. And then once Robert got in, it was really the icing on the cake.
Yeah,
it was so cool. It's been great.
What is the sound back there? It distorts. It sounds like a chair being dragged. Can you guys hear it, or is it just me?
I ain't got no clue.
I'm sitting in the chair. It could be that fucking Lowe's delivery truck over there.
Yeah, it might be, because it disappeared now. Yeah, weird.
Well, but here we are.
Yeah.
I brought you up to date, but yeah, you go ahead.
Yeah, very good. Very good. Now you spared me for a lot of the questions I actually had. But the circle is now full because Rob, yes, who you heard and liked in the mid-90s, he's now in the band. And Rob, how did you end up in Tyrant? And do you remember the first time you heard Tyrant?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, is that noise any better?
It's not. It's gone.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, it's good.
All right. I guess I'm going outside. Anyhow. As a matter of fact, the funny thing about Tyrant is when Solitude first got together, we always had a the rehearsal at my house because I had a big enough place for everybody to rehearse. So, on the weekends we'd get together in the early days and rehearse and practice and play and drink a buttload of beer and whatnot. And John Perez comes over one night with, I think it was Kings, because we would always listen to just random metal bands of the day. He came over, he's like, "We got this new band, Tyrant, man, we need to check this shit out." So we put it on the stereo, so we're all sitting there going, "Hey, some good metal, blah, blah, blah." And so that was my first introduction to Tyrant, was back in the day, the early 90s. And, it is what it is. So gave it an ear, talked about it. I know John was into Tyrant at the time, when everything, we were all fresh, fresh out of the, so that was the first introduction. And here we are now. Greg gave me a call this afternoon, and we just started shooting crap, and this thing, bam, this is what we can do, and I was like, why not, let's do it.
Yeah, you've been called the disciple, or the voice of doom, and that's quite a title to bring with you as a musician.
I don't even think about it, really.
You have your shirt with, it read Voice of Doom, or so either. Disciple of Doom, yeah. Disciple of Doom. Yeah. You care a little bit.
Well, I got up, and my alarm went off, and apparently I turned it off, and I woke up like 2 minutes before 12. I was like, oh, shit. Grab a shirt, and this happened to be the one I grabbed that was laying on there. I don't know. Maybe it's a bug with it.
Yeah. But can you tell me about the new album Hereafter? How have you been working with this? It took some years from the Keep It True show up until the actual release. And Rob, too, has been in the band for almost 3 years now. So how did you work with the songwriting and everything around this?
Okay. All right. This was a lot of fun, I have to say. It all just fell together so easy, and everyone just got along real good. We actually had a hard time not having it just turn into a party when we'd get together and have to buckle down and get some work done. Yeah, we had to kind of try to keep our nose to the grindstone. We all got along good and raised a few pints, as I like to say, in celebration. But what happened was, like I say, we finally came down to having all this new music written. I mean, we had the 10 songs, and then we added Revelations later once we were in the studio. But that was just a part of Dancing on Graves, so that was easy to do. But once me and Rocky and then Ronnie, you know, we had the whole album already written. We're like, man, and we love this material. We love playing it live. It was really vibrant music. I mean, even though it has been 2.5 decades since the last album has been out, you'd think that we'd all be in wheelchairs and on walkers or maybe in old folks' homes, but we're not. We're all standing tall, and we're ready to go with anybody anytime. And that's actually a testament to keeping our health and not letting, you know, the partying of the 80s drag anybody down or put them away for good. So we gave Glenn, I talked to Glenn, and I said, hey, you know, we got offered, of course, again, another big festival in Ventura, California, out here, the Frost and Fire, where we were to play with, to play with Night Demon and Sean Peck's group Cage, and it was really going to be great. It was really going to be great. A lot of Southern California metal, people who have been known internationally like us. And to go out and play that same set that we've been playing since 2009 would have just been a downer, really. I mean, they've already heard all this stuff. It was pretty much a lot of the same set we were playing in the 80s, too. So, you know, me and Rocky talked, and we said, you know, we've got to give Glenn an ultimatum and tell him, look, we want to come out with this all-new material now. And really, it's in Southern California. It's like a restart. Let's see if he's ready, if he's even started on this stuff. And he's, you know, granted, he's working nights in a hospital. I mean, not fun stuff, believe me. And I gave him like 5 years to get it going. Anyone else would have had 5 months, you know. And, but, you know, we had to – it was time now. It's just, you know, the fuse had run out. It was time to explode. And musically, we were ready because we were, you know, firing on all cylinders. The demo sounded pretty good just musically. So, you know, we told him, hey, we got the show coming up. This is going to be it. We're coming out with all new material. That's it. Be ready. You know, and then he had pretty much given the word, you know, even more to Rocky than to me, that there's just no way he could do it. You know, he's just not ready. He doesn't have the time, blah, blah, blah. Well, guess what? I had an ace up my sleeve. I had an ace up my sleeve like I always do.
Okay.
And I always, and I always CYA. That's known out here as LA talk is covering your ass. And so I called Rob and I said, hey, dude, are you doing anything? And he's like, I got some projects here and there, but, you know, what's up? And we'd always talked, you know, Mutual Admiration Society, you know, over the years on Facebook. And I'd always liked his stuff. He always liked mine. And I said, well, me and Rocky have been grinding away on some pretty potent material out here. With a drummer, can I send you a disc? And sure. So I sent Rob out the disc, and about a week he gets back to me. He just says, "Bam!" That's kind of Rob's calling card for that sounds happening. He said, "Bam!" Yeah. I said, "Yeah." He said, "Let's do it. Let's do it." So, you know, it took a while to kind of get everything rolling, but it came down to almost time for the show. And I said, well, let's fly you out to L.A. and have a quick jam on this new stuff. We're going to jam here in the area where we live and then take that drive. It's about close to 2 hours in a really cool venue. I'd seen UFO there before. It's called the historic Ventura Theater. It's like a 100-plus-year-old theater that we headlined. It was basically a small arena. And it was pretty exciting stuff. So we got together and we jammed with Rob. And Rob comes walking in. Rocky and Ronnie knew nothing about it, you know, about the ace up my sleeve. And they weren't down with this previous material. I wouldn't say caught in, you know, in just the now, but maybe they weren't into Facebook as much. Or, you know, because of Facebook, I was really able to reach out and find Rob and do all that kind of, you know, networking as I do as a manager. So when Rob walked in, I said, "Hey, this is Rob Lowe. He's gonna do the gig with us tonight." They're like, "Oh, all right," you know. and the great thing, well, because Glenn hadn't been around anyway, so we knew I was gonna do something, or else I would have had to cancel the show, which I didn't want to do because it was a very big show for us. And so next thing you know, Rob comes in. And at this time, the good part about it was there were no wrong vocals, right, Rob? There were no wrong vocals. There were no wrong song titles.
There was nothing. Yeah. Screw up at all.
Yeah, exactly. There was nothing wrong because there was nothing right. So we just jammed. We just jammed. And then during that rehearsal. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Just pulled it out of our ass,
baby. Yeah, yeah. So at the rehearsal, though, we did do a rehearsal first. With Rob, so we could get a feel of what it was going to be like once we went up on stage. We booked a studio out here. That was great.
I
kind of got it set.
That was the first time I had met any of these people ever, besides Greg on the phone. It's like 2 hours before the show.
Yep. Seriously?
So I'm standing outside.
Yeah.
Smoke, right? And Rocky pulls up in his, I guess, was it that van?
Marshall Stacks in it.
Yeah, got his bandana on. And we're at a rehearsal studio, so you know musicians are going to come and go anyway.
Yep.
Dude walks up and I'm just like, "Hey, how you doing?" He's like, "Hey, what's up?" He didn't even know. Hello, hello.
Come he didn't know he was jamming with him. He didn't know he was going to jam with Rob. He's like, some dude standing out front. They say, "No," Rob comes walking in, grabs the microphone. It was great. But you know how Rob opens up his diaphragm? That's how I like to say it. Rob has a different style from other singers who will kind of always sing in that same range or volume. But Rob has that extra gear where he opens up his diaphragm and boom, his voice comes out. So here we are jamming on this stuff for the first time, and Rob's kind of just getting a feel for it. But then at some point during the song, he'll open up and go, and then Rocky would look at me and Ronnie look at him, and they look at each other and they look at me and they nod their head, you know. They're like, yeah, I can hear the potential. And when he would open up that voice and it would come out, and it was just really cool. So we took that hour and a half drive. Rob was with me. And, I kept cranking the demo all the way there. And he's singing along with it and we're just having all kinds of fun. And the fans had no idea what was to lie, you know, about 5 hours from then when we'd hit the stage. It would be no more Glenn. It would be Rob, and it would be no more Warriors of Metal, Battle of Armageddon, Legions of the Dead. It was just all this new hereafter material. And the band, we were elated at that point to start new.
What did the fans think?
Yeah,
they probably expected old stuff. And
Yeah, they did.
Yeah.
They were in shock. They were in shock, but they cheered after every song. So they welcomed in the new era. For sure. But they were kind of, you know, after the set, some of them hung around. They're like, "Oh, that would have been great if you could have done some of the old stuff too." And I'm like, "Well, you know, give it time."
It's a big risk to take.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, we've been around for so long.
Do it.
Yeah. We've been around for so long. What was the risk? You know, we really had those songs already bought and sold since the 80s. We kind of knew they'd go over. You know, those songs were all over. It was getting a new start that was more important. And Rob, to us, just showed balls. to watch my language, I guess, in front of a lady. But
I'm Norwegian. I don't care.
Okay. I'm just saying, for us as a band and for Rob as a singer, a new guy just flying in and walking up on stage with us, just – as a band and Rob, we showed balls the size of basketballs.
I mean, what band does that? I flew in.
Yeah.
Like I said, had met the fellas. I mean, obviously, I met Greg. Hi. I met him like 24 hours prior.
Yeah.
Do the rehearsal thing and then drive straight to the venue. And then we had the headline that night, so we just got up there and went, all right, you ready? You ready? Yeah, yeah. All right, let's go. Bam. And it was done. Super.
And we had a blast. We had a blast. After we did it, me and Rob went back to the hotel, and we stayed out there. The rest of the guys drove back to L.A., but me and Rob had a hotel and a few cold ones. And we just hung out saying, man, it felt so good, and it has so much potential. I mean, once we started putting time in, to get the vocals right and to get the songs wrapped around the vocals, we knew that we really had something, had something special. And that's what kept us pushing forward.
But what are you going to do now as the album is coming out May 15th? And, of course, you cannot tour right now to show it to the fans. What are you going to do to promote it as a band? Are you doing anything on the internet, or are you just putting it out there and waiting to see what happens?
No worries. I think worried to Tyrant is a waste of time. What's there to worry about? We have our album. It's in the can. It's done. We have a great record company. Have you heard of Red Distribution?
I've heard the name, yeah.
Yeah, they're the ones who do Metal Blade and Nuclear Blast and even some major labels. They're the best distribution you can have, especially for metal. We're going to be everywhere in the world, pretty much. And we're already getting reviews from around the world. Germany have come in, Portugal, just crazy places. The label, this Shadow Kingdom label, is doing a great job for us. They have sent digital downloads to everybody. So the reviews are coming in already from around the world, and they like it, which is great. It causes us not to worry. We've been getting 10 out of 10s. They all think Rob's just an amazing addition to our heavy music. It's like... They were wondering, did we write the music for Rob?
Did you?
No, the songs were done. The songs were done, probably the last song was done probably 7 months before I ever reached out to Rob. He's just a perfect fit.
See him smiling over there.
Yeah. Yeah, no real worries. No real worries. We just have to go with the flow. Probably everything of the playing will be next year. By then the record will have really saturated into people. They'll probably be singing our lyrics when we come out and play,
But does this mean that you don't want to play the old stuff anymore at all? Like, your two first albums are quite legendary, and the 96 album, too, came out good, so... Will you put these away from the for us forever?
No, the thing is, Ozzy, I always look at it like Sabbath. They had all that history with Ozzy, and then Ozzy was gone, and Dio came in, and now they made another history.
Mm.
It's kind of what we're going to do here. But if you notice, I think, Dio never had any problems going back and doing War Pigs and, Paranoid and Iron Man and some of the big songs that got the band interest in the beginning. So, the Doomfest actually had requested, they were going to put it in the contract, I said, don't worry about it, that we do 30 minutes of the original Tyrant. Because they hadn't heard Hereafter yet. They asked us pretty much on our laurels, on our early material, because that's really only what anyone knew.
Yeah, of course.
And I said, well, we've got a new record coming out. We got Robert Lowe singing, and that's really what we wanted to promote. So then I brought all that up. But yeah, they wanted 30 minutes of at least of the old material, and most of the promoters and fans do. So that's not going to be a problem. I can't wait to hear Rob do a spin on it. But it'll be great to hear Warriors of Metal and all these songs with Rob singing. I think the fans are going to love it.
What do you think about that, Rob? You're looking forward to doing your own versions of the old songs?
Well, yeah, I mean, of course. I mean, obviously, you know, we'll stick to the nuts and bolts of it, but, it's going to be, me on vocals, but, yeah, it's not going to be like we're going to take it and go out the left field with it. It'll be, it's what the fans want. I mean, I'm no different than anybody else either when it comes to a band changing vocalists and then they go and do the old song. Yeah, if you're going to do it your way, but don't change it because I like that version from 1942. You know what I'm saying?
That's the one I was. Well, you've done that. You got experience with
people
that
aren't gonna be
from Calabas.
Yeah. What the hell?
Yeah.
What the hell?
That's what I was thinking.
I don't know.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking. He's probably done it before with Candlemass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just a little bit, you think?
So sing them better, though, of course.
Not the first time.
He'll probably sing them better.
Da han hørte hvilke ord som kom ut av munnen hennes, hoppet hjertet hans over et slag, og et sug I magen fikk han til å legge ned McFrysen han var på vei til å spise, for han så på henne at hun mente det hun sa. Men han spurte likevel om hun var sikker, og hun nikket unnskyldende. Men egentlig så hun ikke trist ut I det hele tatt, men letta. Og da hun nikket av restauranten, tenkte han på hva han skulle ønske han hadde sagt. Og det sånne ting som gjør at folk sitter her og gråter noen ganger. Men sånn livet. Og McDonald's bare en liten del av det, tross alt.
Kjenner du noen som snart har bursdag? Med morgenlevering kan du sende bursdagsfrokosten helt hjem til noen du glad I. Enten det partneren din, en god venn eller et familiemedlem. Gjør dagen ekstra spesiell for en du bryr deg om. Med frokost, blomster og sjokolade. Levert hjem på den store dagen. Fordi en god bursdag starter med en ekstra god frokost. Se hvor enkelt det å gi noen en minnerik bursdagsmorgen på morgenlevering.no.
But as you guys are storytellers, apparently, we've already been through your history and the writing of the new album and what's happening now in the future. But we need some good old stories, you know, the kind of stories from the road, the fun one, the ones, yeah. Embarrassing ones, Spinal Tap ones. Do you have any of those you want to share with the listeners? It can be an old one, but it could also be a new one.
Well, you got to remember that our heyday was really during the 80s.
We love hearing about that.
The 80s were crazy. Let's just face it. And, we would go backstage and, after our set and the guys from Wasp were there, Quiet Riot, all these other bands were always at our shows and, hanging out, or Great White, the singer for Great White, me and Rocky couldn't get away from him. He was like chasing us around. These kind of stories sometimes aren't for the ears of children as well. There are some pretty crazy stories and things that happened in those days. But one very funny one was one where Glenn was dating, the same girl as the singer for Metallica, James Hetfield.
Oh.
Yeah. And we ended up at the same party with Metallica. I'll do the Metallica one because everybody knows who they are. And this girl was throwing the party, and we showed up, Metallica showed up. And back then, they weren't any big deal. I mean, they're just another band,
Early
80s.
They
became a big deal. Yeah, they became a big deal later whenever they ran into that guy in New York, the Johnny Z. They didn't, if you notice, they didn't go with Metal Blade. They went with this Johnny Z guy out in New York, Megaforce Records. Mm. So, long story, yeah. So they knew something. So anyways, long story short, we both end up at this party. And Glenn and Hetfield were kind of sizing each other up. And they had both, been invited to Mount Olympus. It's a very rich area up in Hollywood Hills. And this 6-foot blonde had invited both of them. And they were both kind of vying for the attention of her, at this party. And they're kind of wondering, they didn't know that they were both dating her, Yeah. And we were kind of waiting for Glenn to kick his ass or something, but no, Glenn was just holding back, you know, being quiet like he usually does. He kind of has a long fuse. And he was letting Hetfield say all his thing about how they were, you know, headlining up north and starting to set the world on fire and all this. And we're kind of, yeah, right, you know. And so next thing you know, the guy's just talking, never stopping. And he puts his beer down and he goes into the bathroom. And Glenn's like, watch this, guys. And his beer was about half full. Let's just say that Glenn walked over and filled the beer, not with beer, with piss. With piss. In front of everybody. In front of everybody. Yeah, in front of everybody, including the girlfriend, this girl. And she just laughed her ass off. Everybody did that Glenn would just roll up and do that, you know, and trying not to spill it so he would know. And he put the beer back down, and then Glenn zips up, goes back, sits back down. And Hetfield comes out of the bathroom, sits back down, grabs that beer, and just starts pounding it. The whole place is just falling apart. Falling down. Yeah. And the girlfriend's like, oh, gross. You know, she for sure wasn't going to be kissing him at the end of the night. You know? And Glenn got lucky. He took her home that night. But, yeah, that was probably one of the funniest things that had happened. We still talk about it to this day. Like, he didn't realize how warm his beer was, you know. But he was still pounding it down.
What's funny, I got a similar story to that, but it wasn't quite as we were on our little mini tour bus. I think we were doing Mercer State tour, and you know how it is. I mean, they've got their big old tour buses. We're in the little Ford Econoline 150 falling behind. You know, we couldn't stop to piss like we needed to when you're driving halfway across the world from California to New York.
Oh, wow.
And so, you know, we go to the back of the van where I had proceeded to take all the seats out so we would have some room. So we had no seats in the van either. And I got up. I had to piss, man. I was just like, son of a bitch. Fucking beer. So, I found an empty Gatorade bottle.
Nice.
You know, back, did my business, filled up the bottle, yada, yada. And some guys were asleep, and we weren't going to stop. We couldn't stop. So I, like, took and went out and hide this Gatorade bottle in the back corner behind all these old clothes and some, you know, instruments and whatnot. So nobody would find it. And next time we stop, I just take it and throw it away. Well, I end up going up to the front to help the driver with navigation and so forth. And I hear Lyle wake up in the back. Well, and I didn't mean to say Lyle. I wasn't going to give names, so we can forget that. But so I hear him rooting around the back of the van, and I look back, and next thing I know, I see him sitting back there guzzling this fucking bottle of Gatorade.
No.
Fucking freak that.
Another one.
Oh. Went too late.
Oh, God. It's a coloring, I guess.
Kind of figured out what it was after a second. Don't go digging when you're not supposed to be digging.
The golden color, you know.
I like that you came up with two piss green stories.
Yeah. It's a common thing. Drink that much beer, yeah, you're going to have piss.
I forgot that. Shit, I got so many I forgot about. It's crazy.
Yeah, I have some pretty gnarly ones, too.
And, but you don't want to tell them?
Yeah, they're pretty gnarly.
Do tell one, please.
Yeah. Okay, we were playing with Slayer. This is when they first came up. We had just come up. And we were at this club where everybody had the same backstage room. It was us and Slayer and I think Bitch. Bitch was there too. It was all like the Metal Massacre 3 record where we first come out. And I think Bitch came on first, then us, and then Slayer headlined. I don't know why they had headlined. I guess because it was in Orange County and they were from Orange County. So we're all in this backstage room. And we all show up, you know, just like in, you know, jeans and T-shirts and But if you look at our gear, I mean, we literally had gear. I mean, like, we wore like pounds of black leather and studs and all that stuff. And they really weren't at the time. They were kind of jeans and t-shirts at that time. I think Terry wore some stuff, but they didn't get into all that till later on for some reason. But we came in and we're kind of looking around. We didn't see Betsy in there, but we're like, guys, we gotta change, man. We gotta change, roll in the same room together. And we gotta pretty much, you know, all of us have to strip, you know, to get leathered up. And one of the guys in the band, I don't want to say who, said, go ahead. And we kind of thought that they'd leave the room for a while, you know, and go do something else and let us change. But they all just stayed right there with us, you know, and some of the guys in bitch too, they just stayed right there. You know, it's like, wow, really? You know, it's like, whatever. So we just all stripped naked, you know, and we're looking at these guys and they're just sitting right there looking at us. And it's like, what the, you know, so at first we're kind of like in awe of what was going on. And then we kind of bent like, wow, are you guys fruitcakes or something? You know? It's like, really? You know, those kind of words. Like I said, I don't want to expand too much on what we told them. But you guys kind of, is that how you guys roll? You want to see a tyrant naked? Is that a big deal to you guys? And we kind of ended up, you know, talking back and forth a little bit. And then after that, we basically told them, get the F out of here. You know, this is too weird. It's too odd to be sitting here naked in front of other guys. And, you know, like I say, Slayer, they're not the biggest guys in the world. they got the message to get the hell out. You know, so eventually they did. But I remember that at the time was just so odd. It's like, why would you? We told them that we were going to strip, and they said, go ahead. And it's like, wow, that was a story.
I don't want to see my own.
Exactly, exactly. Well, back then we were young studs, you know, in our 20s. You know, where, all right, you want to see it? Here we are, you know, kind of young bucks. But it was so odd that they would stick around while we were going to, told them we were going to get naked and have to put on all our leather. And they said, go ahead. You know, it was funny. It wasn't just Slayer either. It was at least one other band that was in there too. And so that was always something we talked about to this day. You know, it's like, wow, you know, yeah, we had to strip in front of this other band. I get it that there was only one backstage room, but people could leave for a while and come back, but they didn't. They just said, go for it. So, oh, man.
You know you've been on tour a while when you don't care about people getting naked in front of you.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, we're familiar with, you know, the female fans being down with that. But, you know, but the male fans, that was really odd. Yeah. You know, it was very odd.
Du har hørt et intervju med Tyrant. Neste vecka hører vi siste nytt fra Ole Helstad, som spiller I Sæver og Kite, og bukker for Revolver og Høstsabbat.
Og kommer og lander I Krakow, hvor vi skulle bli plukket opp da, og så fort vi liksom får signal på mobilen igjen, og står og venter på bagasjen, så får vi en mail fra Booking. Ok, alle de fem første gigsa I Østeuropa avlyst, fortsett fra Budapest.
Abonner på Jernverket podcast via podcast-app eller gå inn på jernverket.com. Der legger det 88 episoder du kan kose deg med, som kjekt å ha når smittefaren fortsatt lurer bak hvert et hjørne, og du ikke har så mye annet å gjøre lell. Du må I hvert fall holde deg unna folk, så del det med kompisene dine og spre metal, ikke virus. Om du vil bidra med litt kronasj for at jeg skal kunne fortsette, kan du gi støtte via Patreon eller Vips. Og det kult om du slenger inn en god anmeldelse av podden der du lytter. Husk på å følge Jernverket på Instagram og Facebook for konkurranser, diskusjoner og musikalske tips. Jeg vil blant annet nevne at Jernverket og Munnvold skal lansere en chilisaus sammen, der du kan komme med forslag til hva sausen skal hete. Gå inn på Facebook og Instagram for å delta, og du kan vinne en flask når sausen kommer. Jeg heter Helle Stenkløv og gir deg et nytt eller gammelt hardrock-intervju hver fredag. Vi høres!
Han så over skulderen hennes mens hun bestilte, og la merke til at hun valgte filet au fish. Og med ett ble han usikker på om de to egentlig hadde så mye til felles, og om de kjente hverandre så godt som han hadde trodd at de gjorde. Og mens han tenkte på det, så snudde hun seg, og så på han med et smil som gjorde at han var helt sikker på at det skulle være de to for alltid. Og det sånne åpenbaringer som gjør at folk står og kliner rett foran bestillingsautomaten noen ganger. Men sånn livet. Og McDonald's bare en liten del av det, tross alt.